From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois' state government and politics.
Governor Pritzker delivered his budget to lawmakers this week. Does the plan reflect fiscal reality? And also, the governor tried to address issues like affordability for residents. We'll break down more of what he talked about. And are the Chicago Bears now headed for Indiana? That and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Professor Emeritus, and former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime reporter and observer. Our guest this week is Ben Zielinski. He's a reporter with Capital News Illinois. Ben, thanks for being with us once again.
Thanks for having me, Sean.
So, Ben, I'll start with you. The governor has been laying this foundation, I guess, of low expectations for spending over the last several months. He even asked his agencies to hold back some money. Is that what we got in this budget address?
Yeah, I would say so. I think this was a very conservative approach from the governor. I don't think it really holds back a lot of money, but at the end of the day, you know, this budget's increasing by about $900 million, but almost at least 75% of that is all from those mandated areas of state spending on education and pensions and healthcare. So really outside of obligations on the discretionary side, state spending is only growing by less than half of 1%. So, you know, this was a really pretty much flatline budget from the governor that is really leaving everything from the current fiscal year intact and not really changing it hardly at all.
Yeah, Charlie, what was your takeaway from it?
I think Ben is right on target. It was a very conservative budget. It was one, just like we talked about last year, the budget was being developed in a kind of a surreal fashion where you don't know what might be coming down from Washington. And I think the estimate is something like $8 billion that the Pritzker administration says may be in jeopardy for the state of Illinois. So it's a budget that really doesn't increase spending very much beyond what's required by law. And it's certainly not enough to satisfy the various interest groups that were hoping for increases, particularly for education.
Yeah, for those people who don't come around Springfield that often or certainly haven't been part of the budget process, they may not realize how many groups are out there, how many lobby groups who are, you know, pushing their cause. And of course, they all want to see more money. And Ben, they're not getting that. I'm guessing that reaction to this budget overall has not been the most positive from a lot of these groups.
Yeah, nobody's excited about this budget. Even Democrats, you know, they praise the governor, you know, for being fiscally responsible and continuing to fund programs. But, you know, I think a lot of folks at the end of the day were really kind of hoping to see maybe a little bit of a stronger push towards funding some of these social services that are being cut at the federal level. And, you know, at the end of the day, like you said, a lot of these groups that came in asking for more money this year, nobody's getting that. Nobody is getting new funding out of this to fund their priorities for education or tax credits or whatnot. So, you know, I think a lot of people are understanding of the situation the state is in. I know there's a lot of progressives that are, you know, certainly we're hoping for more out of this, but I think people are realistic that, you know, everything coming out of Washington is just so uncertain these days. We really, truly have no idea how much federal funding the state's actually going to be receiving going forward. It changes almost on a weekly basis. There's something else that gets cut off to the state, and then it gets litigated in court, and it may or may not come back at that point. So, you know, I think people are conscious of that. But, you know, I don't think that's going to end, you know, some of these pushes for more funding and more spending on certain areas where people have priorities. You know, as you mentioned, I think every day in the Capitol, there's one group in there that is pushing for new money for whatever their priority is that year. And I don't think that's going to change.
Yeah, and Charlie, you mentioned education, for example, but a lot of different organizations, social services, others received money from pandemic aid over the last several years. In some cases, some of that money was built into their budgets. Now we're starting to see that money has really gone away. And on top of it, the state is not sure what's happening. So the state can't necessarily guarantee they can backfill some of that. it makes for some difficult decisions, it seems like to me, coming up. And if I'm one of these organizations, even schools, I got to be thinking it's hold the line time.
Yeah, and I think that's the case. And again, as you mentioned, the education advocates are not at all pleased with this budget because it basically holds the state contribution flat towards local education. And the teachers' unions are arguing that it should be, billions of dollars more. I think the figure they said was it should be $3 billion more to fully fund the evidence-based funding formula that was enacted a few years ago, in which the State Board of Education looks at individual school districts, looks at the demographics of the student population, looks at what kind of needs there are, looks at what the local resources are, and figures out, well, for the students you're educating, here's how much money you need, here's all that's available to you locally, and we're going to make up the difference. But unfortunately, to make up the difference requires a lot more money than the state has available. Now, some of the advocates have argued what we need to do is go to a what they call a millionaire's tax, so that there would be additional taxes levied on people of high income. But I think the chances of that passing in an election year are next to zero. As a matter of fact, when Pritzker first came in, he advocated to change the state constitution to allow for a graduated income tax, and that got shot down, and that's an area that we've not gone back to. And another argument that's made is, well, we should tax services like our neighboring states do, so that when you go and get a haircut or you go to the beauty parlor, or when you go to the fit club, you would pay a sales tax on top of whatever you pay for the service. And most states, as I say, our neighboring states do that, and we don't. And that's been suggested that would be a way to bring in billions of dollars. But again, I don't think the appetite is there for doing any kind of significant tax increases. Now, the Republicans' critics will say that this budget does include tax increases, but they're directed very narrowly at certain segments of the, what would you say, of the economy, and they won't probably affect the average citizen very much at all.
Yeah, Ben, were you surprised that the governor didn't offer up some bigger plan for revenue? I mean, even if it wouldn't get through, he could be looked at as, hey, I'm trying to appease you and trying to get this type of money. But he didn't do that. So, I mean, to some extent, I guess it's on him. If he's not leading, the legislature is not going to follow.
Yeah, and it really actually didn't surprise me much. I know, the governor bills himself as a pretty progressive guy, and he has supported, the graduated income tax in the past. But, a few months ago, he said that wasn't going to be a legislative priority for him this year. If lawmakers want to do that on their own, he said they're welcome to do it. And I suspect we're going to see some sort of push from lawmakers to still enact something that might be a constitutional amendment voters can consider in the fall. But on the governor's side, no, I really wasn't that surprised to see him continue this really targeted approach on the revenue side. The last two budgets have been, the tax increases that were included in it were very specific, mostly at businesses and mostly at things that really aren't going to affect everyday people like you and I. And that was certainly the same in this budget because, the new revenue is really coming from three areas. One is a change to a cap on taxes that affect businesses and the losses they can report. Another is just aligning a few different taxes at casinos on table games versus electronic gaming. And the new one that's, certainly getting headlines is a tax on social media companies, large social media companies with users in the state. They're going to be billed for how many people in the state are using those social media platforms, but that only generates about $200 million. So it's really not a massive tax, not going to be a bank breaker for these companies, certainly. So No, I mean, the governor's always kind of exhibited a generally conservative revenue approach in the last several years when he's needed to. He's been opposed to any broad-based tax increases like income tax or sales tax that, we would all have to pay. So, in an election year, certainly was not surprised to see the governor stay the course on that.
He's very proud of the fact that the state has been able to pay down a huge bill backlog that we faced when he first came in, and that we've had, I believe, 8 or 10 credit upgrades under his watch, and he's had balanced budgets that he's proposed ever since he's come into office. And this will be another one that's balanced. I think this would be what, his 8th balanced budget. Yeah, and it's something that he's very proud of. And in fact, he mentions it like at the beginning of his speech. That was one of the things he pointed out. And I think that's something that tempers his willingness to, what would you say, to seek additional broad-based revenues that he could use to increase spending. Now, the Republicans were critical of the budget. They say, well, no, it's not really balanced because here's these needs that we're not doing, and we're increasing taxes. But I think if you look at it and you look at the numbers from the governor's budget office, they predicted that the revenues that are going to come in, including the social media platform fee that Ben mentioned and the couple others, the resources are going to be roughly $56 billion, and the spending is also going to be 56. And the difference is that the revenues will be 56 billion 55 million, spending will be 56 billion 32 million. So they're projecting a budget surplus for FY27 of $24 million. Now, on a $50 billion plus budget, 24 million is, I'm not that good at math, but I'm guessing it's probably less than a penny on the dollar. But it's we're saying we're going to have more revenue than we're going to spend. So in my book, that makes it balanced.
Ben, on the when you think about Governor Pritzker, through the years, again, I mentioned all of the money that was coming from the federal government, which really did help the state turn things around, a lot of the pandemic aid and such. Now he doesn't have that. Now this really gets to being a bit more of a difficult governing job for him. I mean, he's got to appease people. He's got to appease his own, his own members, for example. Yet he wants to continue to be this fiscal conservative. This is really going to, in my opinion, really test whether or not Pritzker, how he's going to be remembered as governor, even though he may have many more years in that office. But these are the types of budgets that are going to be the most difficult for him going forward. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it kind of, if we're going to talk about a legacy, I guess, I would say maybe the early legacy on budgeting right now is that, the governor's very proud of his work on the budget. He always talks about the 10 credit upgrades that he's gotten in his tenure. And he took office at a really hard time for the state financially, coming out of the budget impasse and, social services were pretty decimated at the state level at that time. And a lot of that stuff has been built back up by the governor and included a lot of new spending. So, Republicans are really frustrated by the rate that spending has gone up under J.B. Pritzker. But, we haven't seen since the governor took office, 7 years ago now, this is his 8th budget proposal. We haven't seen massive tax increases. There was, a lot of new taxes and fees that were implemented in 2019, largely to kind of help pay for the state's capital program that was passed that year. But we've never seen an income tax increase from this governor on personal income tax. So, I think the governor really does want to be remembered for his budgeting policies, and he wants to be remembered as somebody who boosted services in the state of Illinois, but also tried to respect the taxpayer and, you know, didn't go wild, I guess, on new taxes and other things. And I think he really is trying to maintain that legacy and is not willing to do anything that would risk the state's credit upgrades that he's received.
Yeah, and Charlie, there is one thing that I think Republicans have a legitimate point here is that what have we done really to bring down property taxes? Have we done enough there?
No, that's a legitimate concern. The reason I think that our property taxes are high, and if I'm not mistaken, Illinois has the highest or near the highest level of property taxation of any state in the union. Part of the problem is that we rely on property taxes so heavily to fund education, and other states put a lot more of their state financings into education. So property taxes for schools are a small percentage, or they will have like local income taxes that will go for schools as opposed to property taxes. And I'm not sure what the answer is. There have been suggestions made that we should increase the income tax and use that money specifically for local schools to ease the property tax burden. But I don't see that going anywhere either. As I say, the bottom line is Illinois as a state relies too heavily on property taxes to finance K-12 education, and that makes it very difficult for local homeowners and businesses.
Well, speaking of home ownership, a lot of people having difficulty with that these days. Also, people having difficulty with things like insurance and utility costs. Ben, the governor did try to address some of this, didn't he, during his speech this week?
Yeah, the governor has proposed a plan that would change a lot of just the way that the state handles zoning policy and housing. So, I mean, in summary, I would say there's going to be a big fight ahead with the Municipal League and local governments because the policy that the governor has proposed would certainly restrict how local governments can do zoning for residential housing. And really, the goal of the governor's proposal here is to increase the supply of housing in Illinois, and he wants to relax restrictions on zoning to allow more multifamily housing in areas. And you know, I think the governor is hoping that by ultimately relaxing some of these restrictions, as well as creating some incentives for builders to start more housing projects, ultimately, the supply of housing in the state is going to increase, and that would help bring the price down, which would make home ownership more affordable for people in Illinois. But, you know, this is zoning and housing can be one of the most controversial things that a legislature can do. Really gets, you know, local governments fired up when their powers are taken away. And I think you're going to see a big fight, you know, over housing policy in Springfield. But I think it's really interesting actually to see the governor getting into housing policy as his top legislative priority for this spring. It's certainly an area a lot of people, especially progressives, are talking about. And, you know, it's very challenging for folks to buy a house, even in Illinois these days. So, I think it'll be a really interesting conversation that's going to evolve a lot here in the coming months.
Yeah, Charlie, what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think, and maybe this is going to be cynical, but the Municipal League and local authorities are going to oppose any attempt from the state to kind of impose statewide zoning, if you will. And one of the things that they've said, the Municipal League in response, has pointed out that Illinois communities vary widely in their geography, the population density, infrastructure capacity, housing demand. Uniform statewide standards cannot adequately reflect those differences or the planning efforts underway or completed in many municipalities. And the quote from Municipal League Chief Executive Officer Brad Cole, quote, "This is another example of where one size fits all statewide mandates are unworkable and will damage communities." So, in terms of requiring, for example, a house in a neighborhood that's got a certain square footage to allow that house to build, what would you say, subsidiary housing, what they call granny flats, where local zoning would not allow it, this would override that. So, that portion isn't going to go very far, I don't think. On the other hand, the governor's plan also includes additional money for housing, And that, I think, is more likely to be approved. That's not on the general fund side. It's on capital spending. But $150 million to support middle housing construction and $50 million for down payment assistance for first-time home buyers, and $100 million for municipalities to remove infrastructure barriers, funding for stormwater, sewer, site access, things like that. So the municipal league and local authorities are going to welcome the money, but they're not going to want the state regulation. And I'm guessing that that part of the governor's plan probably will not get through. All of this requires legislative approval, of course.
All right. Well, we'll talk more about the budget, of course, over the next several weeks. Lawmakers have until the end of May to try to craft a budget plan and get that in place for the new fiscal year that'll start this summer. Another big story that happened this week, and Ben, you were covering this, the Chicago Bears, we've talked about that on the show quite a bit, wanting a new stadium. This has been going on for years. They've talked about different locations, moving from Soldier Field, where they are now, maybe to another site in the city, also Arlington Heights, the site of the former Arlington Racecourse. They bought that property. There's been talk about trying to move out there. Indiana joined the fray, of course, and trying to lure the Bears across the border. And this week, a House Ways and Means Committee in Indiana approving a stadium authority bill. The Bears came out with some statements sounding like they are now focused on a site near Hammond, Indiana. So, Ben, what is going on, and is this a done deal?
It is far from a done deal, I think. And, you know, really what the Bears said is now that Indiana lawmakers have moved forward on legislation, they will do their due diligence to explore the feasibility of building a stadium right off of the state line, actually, in Hammond. Indiana lawmakers are really ponying up a ton of state incentives, actually new taxes on Lake County, Indiana taxpayers, to make this stadium a reality for the Bears. That would be, honestly, a great deal that the state of Illinois is not going to match. It would be a massive financial win for the Bears to move to Indiana under the legislation that's being proposed there. But I still think the Bears' heart is in Illinois. And at least as of Wednesday, according to Governor Pritzker, conversations were going really well. They were pretty close to a deal. They were actually going to, you know, consider potentially a bill on Thursday morning in a committee. And then the Bears asked lawmakers to hold off on taking a vote in committee on Thursday morning in order to amend the bill. That's very routine in Springfield. You know, folks don't like to move forward on their bills before they're actually ready to go. But then I think lawmakers were blindsided by that statement from the Bears on Thursday that we're looking at Hammond, and, you know, it's certainly a potentially a priority for them. So where we go from here, I'm not sure, but I think it's far from a done deal. Conversations are going to continue here in Illinois, and I think Illinois lawmakers are probably going to come up with something to you know, ensure that the Bears can stay here and try and meet their needs.
Now, Hammond, Indiana is, for all intent and purposes, a Chicago suburb. It just happens to be over the border. It's very close, just like Arlington Heights. It might even be closer to Soldier Field than Arlington Heights. Charlie, at the same time, you can see what's going on here. The team is trying to play these two states off of each other. I think from a lawmaker's perspective, what I have seen in the years when things like this occur is some lawmakers really get PO'd by this. I mean, it's like I'm out on a limb, I'm telling the media and telling my constituents this is what's going on, and then you come and you blindside me with something like this. It seems to me like it could actually set back negotiations in Illinois, at least for a bit. But it, again, like Ben said, may not doom the idea of them playing and building a new stadium in Illinois. What are your thoughts on that?
No, I think as you guys have both said, that this is sort of still in play, and it's the Bears attempting to leverage to get the best deal they can. And one of the things about this site in Hammond near Wolf Lake, it's about 20 miles from the Loop. And actually, some of Wolf Lake is in Indiana. It's right on the state border, that particular lake. And it has this kind of a sordid history. Back in the 20s and 30s, gangsters used the lake as a disposal site for bodies. And so, I don't know, and it's near the BP Whiting refinery, and there's some question about whether or not this particular site is suitable in the sense of what's underneath the covering. I think it was an industrial landfill, and maybe part of the bear's due diligence is to sample, take soil samples, core samples, to see whether or not it's even feasible to build on that particular site. So there's a lot of uncertainty. One of the difficulties is that the bears want an answer within a week or so, because Indiana is going to pass this bill. It came out with, I think it was a unanimous vote or one dissenting vote out of committee. And the Speaker of the House is solidly behind it. It's going to pass. The governor is very much for it. It'll pass the Indiana Senate, and it'll be signed by the governor by the end of next week. And Indiana wants a commitment from the bears. Now, because of the goofiness of this Illinois legislative schedule, if I'm not mistaken, the two chambers, the House and the Senate, won't be in Springfield on the same day until the middle of March after the primary. And so for Illinois to get anything done, they'd almost have to accelerate and try and do it within the next couple of days. I just don't see that happening.
It's time now for our notes from the field. Charlie, we'll start with you this week.
Well, one of the things that the governor announced in his budget and state of the state address, for which he took credit, is this: the state of Illinois has a medical debt relief program, which he says is designed to unburden working families who are sinking under the weight of overdue bills from an unexpected illness. And he said, "I'm proud to announce that as of this week, we have negotiated the elimination of $1 billion in medical debt for 520,000 Illinoisans across all 102 counties. And we're doing it for pennies on the dollar." And he's proposing that we continue it this year. And there is money in the budget, $15 million for FY27. The pennies on the dollar is really true. We've spent about $10 million on the program, and we've been able to provide relief, erasing more than $1 billion in medical debt for more than 500,000 Illinois residents.
And Ben?
This week we saw two candidates running for statewide office finally get some TV ads out there from their own campaigns. First one was Margaret Croak running in the Democrat primary for comptroller. She was just endorsed by Governor Pritzker, which means there's potentially some money out there to help her out in this race. And she's released new TV ads this week. So that is certainly going to make a difference in a primary where a lot of folks are probably really just wondering who these candidates are. The second ad we saw this week was Juliana Stratton's campaign launched their first ad. You've seen a lot of Stratton on TV from a political action committee financed by the governor. But this is the first time that Juliana's campaign has actually created their own ad. And it was a rather provocative ad with basically the entire theme of F Donald Trump. So I think it's going to be very interesting to see the reception from voters. And Juliana Stratton is certainly introducing herself to voters under that guise that she is a strong anti-Trump candidate.
All right. Well, we're out of time for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and the Capital News Illinois reporter Ben Zielinski. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.